I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome to Spark My Muse, everyone. Today, my guest is Dr. Jessica Tracy, professor of psychology at the University of British Columbia, and the author of a new book, Take Pride, Why the Deadliest Sin Holds the Secret to Human Success. Thank you so much, Jessica, for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And so this is a really fascinating book, and I wasn't even thinking of pride actually as an emotion. I thought of it more of, you know, maybe something like something we take part in, but not so much a human emotion. And I don't know if that's a response or reaction people ever give you right off the cuff.
No, I haven't heard that. But, you know, I'm not that surprised. I think that it's certainly not one of the, you know, basic fundamental emotions that we do think of first and foremost when we think about emotions. You know, it's not like fear, disgust, or anger, or happiness. And it is different, you know, from those emotions in important ways, right? It's much more complex. It's much more about our sense of self. So I think it is right to think of it as in a sort of almost its own distinct category compared to those emotions.
Yeah, it's so much more complicated. I mean, I've thought of it as, you know, something. It's just such a mixed bag. You will hear your parents or your spiritual influences or church say, you know, don't be prideful and arrogant and things. But then you'll also hear the other side where take pride in your work or have school pride or things like that. So you'll hear both of those ends, and you talk about the two aspects of pride. Maybe you could unpack that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a big issue with pride, is that many people for a long, long time have seen it as a really bad thing, right? It's sort of this deadly sin. Religious scholars and the philosophers have always talked about it as being something that we should avoid, something that's sort of the source of our downfall. And what we found in our research is that that might be true, but it's true for one kind of pride in particular. And in fact, there are two distinct kinds of pride. And we distinguish between them by calling the bad pride or sinful pride hubristic pride, kind of consistent with the Greek term hubris for arrogance, overweening pride. And then we call the other pride authentic pride. And what we mean by that is a pride that's sort of a sense of confidence in one's accomplishments, hard-earned achievements, and sort of based on a real, genuine sense of self-worth. And what we found is that that kind of pride has all kinds of positive outcomes in terms of, you know, people's social relationships, psychological functioning, and achievement.
But they are lumped into one basket, both this positive and this negative. And I can't help but think that they sort of are two different things, but really they're lumped together as one emotion, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, really for me, it all comes down to how you define the distinction between emotions. So in other words, you know, what's the thing that makes you decide that's where I want to draw a boundary and say that's a different emotion versus that's the same emotion? And, you know, people disagree about that sort of thing. To me, it's never been that important to say, well, these are two different emotions versus these are two kinds of one emotion. Because I really do think that just depends on the sort of definitional issue. But what's important to me is to say, okay, well, let's look at what's similar and what's different between them. And there certainly are similarities. Both kinds of pride motivate people to sort of take power, take control over their environment, be highly agentic. So that's a similarity. And they both share a nonverbal display. So both kinds of pride are associated with this sort of expansive postural display that we see and recognize. And we found that people all over the world, including tribal villagers in West Africa, recognize and identify this expression as pride when people stick up their head and you know, stick out their chest and pull back their shoulders and smile. That's both kind of prides. But at the same time, you know, when we think about the consequences, very different. People who tend to feel authentic pride tend to achieve a lot. They're highly conscientious. They tend to be agreeable. They want to help others. They care about their relationships. And they tend to have a lot of success. People who tend to feel hubristic pride are much more narcissistic. So they're more sort of focused on their ego at the expense of others. And they often will derogate others and sort of, you know, insult others in order to feel good about themselves. And as a result, they have all kinds of social problems. So they tend to be disliked. They're not, you know, they don't form solid relationships that are long lasting. And that's really not an important kind of part of their life for the most part, is their relationships. And they do get power. Both kinds of pride lead to power, but it's very different kinds of power, where on the one hand, you have a power that's based on competence and kindness and a willingness to sort of help others and be an example for them. and the other that's based on threat and intimidation and basically forcing people to give you what you want.
And so is the hubristic pride one that is self-centered, or are they both sort of in the realm of I don't want to say self-centered even in a negative way, just kind of where self is kind of the beginning of that emotion?
Yeah, no, absolutely. When you define self-centered that way, then I think that's both of them, right? They're both, you know, to feel any kind of pride, you need to make a self-evaluation, by which I mean you need to think about who you are, how you feel about yourself, your identity, the kind of person that you want to become, and whether you're doing things toward becoming that person. And it can be a really good thing, right? I mean, we evolve to have these selves that we care deeply about, right? We're so motivated to try to do things that make us feel good about ourselves. It's a really important motivation. And pride is the emotion that we feel when we're doing that, when we realize, hey, you know what? I'm on track to becoming the kind of person that I want to be. And that feeling is incredibly powerful. You know, it's what motivates us to do all kinds of things, right? All the hard work that we do when we, you know, decide I'm going to stay home tonight and study instead of go out and have fun, or, you know, even things like I'm going to clean my basement instead of, you know, sit around and watch TV. Those things are not pleasurable, right? That's a tough decision to make from a basic I want to maximize pleasure kind of perspective, but they make us feel good about ourselves. They bring us pride.
Yeah. You know, you're probably familiar with Amy Cuddy's work on, and she talks about power poses and expansive posing and things like that. And it makes me wonder if shame is the opposite of pride, or how does that fit in? Because I know that people will kind of make themselves smaller when they feel ashamed.
Yeah.
And, you know, people get expansive in their posture when they feel full of pride, both kinds, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe you could weigh in on that.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think to a large extent, shame is the opposite. It is the emotion that we feel when we feel bad about ourselves, when we feel like not just that we have done something wrong, but that there's something wrong with us, right? We feel like we're just sort of, I'm a bad person. I'm incompetent. I'm dumb. I'm ugly. I'm not smart. Whatever it is, shame is this really global negative sense of self. And it has a lot of negative consequences. People who feel shame tend to hide and withdraw from whatever situation caused them to feel shame. And while that probably is adaptive in sort of an evolutionary sense that, you know, if you're about to get attacked for some flaw that you have, it's a good idea to withdraw from the situation. In modern life, it can be really problematic that, you know, people avoid circumstances where maybe it would be better to keep working or improve more. And, you know, many of the avoidant behaviors that people use to do that are often problematic in their own right. Things like addictive behaviors and that kind of thing, which is one well-known shame coping mechanism. So in terms of the nonverbal display, you're absolutely right that the pride display, which, you know, like I said, we found to be universal all over the world. People all over the world also spontaneously show it when they're feeling pride. And we found this with Olympic athletes, including congenitally blind Olympic athletes. They all tend to display this expression. And yet, you're right, Amy Cuddy really nicely showed that when people consciously choose to engage in that expression that we had found to be associated with pride, they end up feeling really powerful, which is, I think, a really neat finding. It has these kind of internal effects. So, you know, that's a good thing. And shame, meanwhile, is the opposite. So when people feel shame, they do exactly what you said. They sort of slump downwards. They tilt their head downwards. They scrunch up their bodies and basically make themselves small. And we found that, you know, for the Olympic athletes I mentioned, they also, when they lose, they tend to show shame. And that's for people all over the world as well. So yeah, I definitely think it's accurate to say that, you know, an absence of pride when it becomes the form of shame can be quite problematic.
Yeah, that is really a fascinating point. I think your research, one of the parts that you speak of is how you were first drawn into researching the topic, and some of the scientific studies had never been done. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
You know, I was studying, when I was in grad school, I was really interested in these emotions that are all about the self, emotions like pride and shame and guilt. And you know, I found them really fascinating because they are a different level of kind of complexity than the emotions I was mentioning before, like disgust and fear and anger, and they're all about the self. And I was really interested in the self and how we think about ourselves and build an identity. But these emotions hadn't been studied nearly as much as those other basic emotions, in large part because the field of emotion research had really focused on emotions that were known to be part of human nature, biological and innate. And the way that we knew that was from the work by Paul Ekman, who is this great emotion scientist, who showed that six distinct emotions are associated with facial expressions that are universal, they're recognized by people all over the world in the same way. And he famously went to Papua New Guinea in the 1960s and showed that the people there recognized these emotions in the same way that Americans did. And that was really just an incredibly groundbreaking finding because, you know, in the 1960s, these Papua New Guineans, these were members of a small-scale traditional society who were living off the land pretty much like their ancestors had for, you know, millennia. And they really had no access to Western culture, no way of kind of contacting any other culture at all, really. And yet, you know, when he showed them photos of anger and fear and disgust, they said, yeah, that's exactly what those emotions are. Mm-hmm. And so those emotions became kind of the focus of emotion research in psychology. Emotions that didn't seem to have facial expressions were to some extent left behind. And so in studying, you know, pride, it occurred to me that, well, wait a minute, okay, I totally believe that pride does not have a distinct facial expression because Ekman is the guy who knows about the face. Far be it from me to say, you know, I would find something in the face that he didn't find because he just spent, you know, years and years of research and observation studying how the human face moves when it's being emotional. But with pride, it's not really about the face. There is a smile, and that's important, and that's shared with happiness. But with pride, what you see that distinguishes it from all other emotions is this expansive bodily display. Right, the fact that people stick out their chests and pull back their shoulders, that is distinctive to pride. And so, you know, my graduate advisor and I sort of thought, well, listen, there's no reason that that couldn't also be a universal, you know, innate basic expression. And so we, you know, tested whether people agreed that it was pride. And sure enough, when we looked at, you know, undergrads in California where we were, they said, yes, that's the case. We did it with children and it turned out people as young as 4 years old knew what a pride expression looked like and would say, yeah, that's that person's feeling pride. And then we traveled to a different country. We went to Burkina Faso in West Africa, and we were fortunate to get to work with a group of people there living in the western countryside of the country. And, you know, it's certainly not like Papua New Guinea was in the 1960s, but there's a really extreme level of poverty in Burkina Faso. It's typically ranked the third poorest country in the world. And so simply as a result of that, the people who live there just really have no way of kind of getting any exposure to other cultures, right? There's obviously no electricity or plumbing, but, you know, as a result, there's also no magazines, no television, no movies. Most of the people who live there don't regularly see people from other countries. And we were able to find a group of people who couldn't read or write, spoke only their local dialect. I mean, really people who it was just really hard to conceive how they might have learned about a pride expression from, you know, American or European culture. And when we did our study there and we showed them the pride expression, they tended to say, yep, that's pride. So that, to me, that's pretty convincing evidence that this is something that people all over the world know, probably because of our human nature.
Yeah, that is really remarkable. And so you could really say, not just is it, it's universal because you could tell people from different cultures who are not exposed to very many outside influences could do it, but also just people who hadn't even seen it because they were blind.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So the blind, yeah. So in that study, we had athletes from all over the world and we just watched what they did after winning a match in the Olympics. This was a judo competition in the 2004 games. And sure enough, they displayed pride. That happened no matter what country they were from. It happened for men and women. And then, yeah, as you said, it happened for the blind athletes, including congenitally blind athletes, people who really inarguably have never seen a pride expression.
Yeah, and they wouldn't be thinking of it either, like, what should I do if I win? You know, they're just doing it in the moment.
Yeah, you can tell a story about that, and maybe that's the case, but, you know, even so, then someone has had to verbally say to them, when you win, push out your chest, hold back your, you know, it's hard to imagine, because that's not really how we learn these things, right? So
Yeah, that's really fascinating. It makes me think, too, we were thinking of this as a human response, but really other primates do this too, because as I'm thinking about having a sense of self and whether it's the hubristic pride or the authentic pride, there's a certain amount of self and self-consciousness, if you will, and I don't know how developed it is in other primates, but you are thinking of yourself in relationship to other people and you're thinking, I did this and you didn't, or I'm better than you or something. And then on the other side, you might be thinking of, I want to do well in front of the others that are here or something. And it's kind of sophisticated when you're thinking about it socially. And then there's other primates beyond, you know, beyond Homo sapiens having these instances too.
Yeah, well, so my thinking on that is that what we see in other primates is not really pride. It's a precursor of pride. So I mean, chimpanzees are a great example because they've been known, primatologists have documented this for a long time, that when an alpha chimpanzee feels like maybe his power is being threatened or there's a new member coming to the group and he wants to make it clear, look, I'm the tough guy, you know, I'm the boss, he will show what's known as a bluff display. And if you see photos of this display, I mean, it looks about as much like the pride expression as you could imagine, knowing that, you know, we have two different species here. You know, so the animal will stand upright on his back legs, which, you know, is not the typical stance for chimps, who do usually have their forelegs on the ground. And he makes himself bigger. His chest is puffed out. They have this thing called piloerection, which is where their hairs stand on end. It's sort of thought to be kind of a precursor of the chills in humans. But they show it in this moment of engaging this bluff display. And as you can imagine, the effect it has is just makes the animal look huge, right? It has all this fur, and now it's standing up on end. And it's this really kind of aggressive threat, back off sort of display. Now, I think that's absolutely where our human pride expression came from. But I do think it's different. So for chimps, it's really a warning signal. It's a way of, you know, sending a message to others saying, I'm the tough guy, you better watch out. You know, if you think I come in here, you're going to have me to kind of mess with first. It's not about achievement. You know, it's not about, I just had a success and I want to make sure others know. It's not about that. It really is just a sort of, I'm aware of a status differential, that I'm the high status guy and I don't think this other guy is as high status as me. And I'm going to show this display to make sure that he knows I'm going to, if he tries to challenge me, we're going to have to fight it out. That's much simpler than what pride is, which is really sort of a signal that typically occurs in response to a success or some other event that makes us feel pride. And, you know, we show it because we know, hey, listen, my status is rising. We know, you know, I'm feeling good about myself. I'm meeting a goal for my identity. I'm doing something that my social group members would like. And when we show it, the inference that others take from it is this sort of automatic, that person has high status or deserves high status kind of response. And we found that people do have this unavoidable response. If you see a pride expression, you sort of can't help but come to see the person as deserving high status. It's this really unavoidable response, which, you know, may well be inherited from our non-human primate ancestors, given the similar message that the bluff display sent. But what we do with that really, you know, it varies so much. And I think that's because we humans don't just have to respond. You know, we don't then just say, okay, he's showing pride, I'm gonna defer. We might think, he's showing pride, I see him as high status, but I don't want to. I'm not going to give him power, you know, or we might think, what did he do to deserve it? I want to learn about that achievement. Or we might think, oh, maybe this is someone who just had an accomplishment. I want to learn from and copy him. You know, there's a lot of different ways we can go. And that's, you know, because we're human.
Yeah. We need a little more verification.
Exactly.
So chimps never achieve something and then kind of like show off. Or they don't do that?
You know, I've asked so many I'm not a primatologist, to be clear, so I don't want to say anything definitive about that, but I have asked a number of primatologists about that because, you know, of course I've hoped, yes, there's going to be a chimp pride display. No one that I've talked to has been able to, you know, tell me any kind of evidence of that there's sort of any reliable thing that chimps do after, you know, some sort of success. And I think we can come up with what might be seen as a success in the chimpanzee world, even if it is winning a fight, you know, solving a puzzle or something like that. There doesn't seem to be any distinct nonverbal display that happens in response. So I do think that seems to be an evolutionary transition.
Oh, wow. That's neat. And so what do you think is the most interesting thing you've learned from your research?
Like I was saying before, that there are these two pathways to status, dominance and prestige. So dominance is sort of being aggressive and forceful and taking what you want and forcing, you know, intimidating others to giving you what you want. And it's driven by hubristic pride, the more arrogant pride. And then prestige is really about achieving and demonstrating competence and, you know, getting high status because others really look up to you and think that you have something to contribute to the group and want to learn from you. What we found that I think really surprised me was that both of these strategies actually work in terms of getting power. So we've had groups of people work together to complete a task, and then, you know, we watch what happens, we videotape the interactions, and we figure out who is the leader. And we do that by asking everyone in the group to rate everyone else. We have outside observers watch the videos and make ratings. We use a number of different measures of influence and leadership. And then we have everyone rate how prestigious and how dominant everyone else was. And it's kind of an amazing thing. Both the dominant and the prestigious people emerge as clear leaders. People in these groups, they say they don't like the dominant people. They actually say they're afraid of them, which is kind of fascinating given that these are just all undergrads working together. They really have no actual power over each other. But the dominants nonetheless manage to be threatening so that the people who work with them don't like them, but they still give them power. They still, you know, end up having influence. Yeah.
Yeah, that is strange. And you would think that, you know, it's an artificial situation and they it would be their choice whether they give them influence or not.
Right. Well, I mean, it is their choice in some way, but I think, you know, we have these kind of innate behavioral responses that we can't really avoid responding to. And I think we absolutely evolved to respond to people who use a strategy of dominance as well as a strategy of prestige. And both have benefits. You know, it's the reason that we defer to dominance, you know, it's not because we want to or like them, but it's because we're afraid not to. And that's, you know, it's an ancient part of our makeup.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. And then what surprised you is the most in your research on pride?
In another study, we found that those dominant people actually ended up being leaders that led to success. So, I mean, you know, people didn't, we had a study where we had people led by either a dominant or a prestigious leader. People didn't really like working with a dominant leader. They kind of thought that he was a bit of a jerk. But they still did well on various tasks. Whatever the group assignments were, the groups that were led by a dominant performed pretty well, suggesting that dominant leaders can actually lead a group to success. You know, it won't be a success that people enjoy. They're not going to like working with the dominant, but they might actually perform okay in certain circumstances. That sort of surprised me.
Yeah, it seemed like the dominant leader produced better results than the prestigious leader. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what does that say for like bad bosses?
Yeah,
like, it's okay to be a bad boss.
Yeah, it's kind of a terrible message. my thinking on it though is that, you know, this might be a situation where the effects are maybe not restricted to the lab, but maybe because here's a situation where we have a group of undergraduates who are all equals and we're telling them, no, this guy randomly was determined to be the leader. So he or she may or may not actually feel like they really deserve to be the leader. And if you're prestigious and you're in that position, it might be very hard to take control. And, you know, instead you probably want to lead very kindly and gently, allow everyone to speak, you know, make sure to get consensus before you reach any decision. And that can lead to a wonderful experience. You know, the people who worked with prestigious leaders really enjoyed themselves. They felt good about themselves. They liked their leader. They liked the other people in their group. They did well on a task that required creativity. And creativity, of course, requires people to feel comfortable and think outside the box. And prestige-led groups really did well on that. But it may be the case that when there's a task that involves, you know, one clear answer, you need someone who's going to say, okay, enough of this. Let's reach a decision. This isn't what I'm deciding. Rather than saying, no, we need to have consensus. And, you know, given that we had assigned leaders, it's possible that the people who were, you know, the prestigious leaders felt they couldn't really do that. They just maybe felt uncomfortable doing that. So I don't think the message is, you know, foster dominance. I think the message might be, let's figure out what the dominants are doing to get success and then try to train prestigious leaders to do that thing.
And it also might depend on what is the task at hand. If it's a simple enough task and it's just about getting it done is one thing, but if it's something that requires a lot of creative energy, then might have to go about it in a different way.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah.
That is really fascinating. And so you can have this authentic pride that is thinking of others and thinking about the community and not just railroading and steamrolling over people. And then it can take a nasty sideways turn and turn into hubristic pride. And, you know, that's kind of the downfall of a lot of leaders and people in charge of things. It can start out one way and kind of go sour. Mm-hmm. And so that's a challenge for people. And, you know, it's something we don't want to end up doing. And so how does this sort of happen?
Yeah, so, you know, this is something that we certainly have observed in real life. And, you know, there's less research on it, so I think it's an important area for future research. But, you know, what I think happens is, as you said, you know, authentic pride is really just this major motivator. And, you know, we find that in study after study basically shows when people realize they're lacking authentic pride, they actually will change their behavior and do better as a result. So we found this with students, students who did badly on an exam and then lack of authentic pride led them to change their behavior, study harder, and then do better on the next exam. So it is this incredibly rewarding emotion. It's like a carrot that we seek out. But then the problem is once we have the carrot, you know, once we've eaten the carrot, so to speak, we get really attached to that. You know, it really is this great feeling. We evolve to care just incredibly deeply about ourselves and feeling good about ourselves. And so when we have it, you know, one way to go is to say, okay, that was great. I had this accomplishment. I feel really good. What's my next accomplishment going to be? And that, I think, is probably the way to go in terms of, you know, maintaining authentic pride. The other way to go is to say, I had this accomplishment. I feel great about myself. I'm just going to enjoy that. What can I do to nourish these feelings, to really kind of expand them, make them continue? And that's when people start to say, well, gosh, you know, if other people knew about my accomplishment and sort of gave me some praise, that would feel really good. And so that's when you start to see bragging, you know, which is sort of the beginning of hubristic pride, is this sense of like, not just sharing with others, no, like, this is, you know, I want to celebrate my accomplishment, but I want to make sure everyone knows. So that's when I need to feel good about myself.
Yeah. It's kind of like you forget the other people and it becomes just about your end game or your angle, and the other people sort of fall away. The bigger picture falls away and it becomes like about that next high, the next good feeling or something.
I think that's right. And, you know, it's interesting because I do think there are benefits in the sense of, you know, the more you show your pride, the more power and status you're going to get. But there are also major social costs, because if you display pride or talk about pride in a way that comes off as arrogant, others don't like you. You know, you lose socially in that way. And I think for some people that might be worth it. You know, it might be okay to say, listen, I just want to be powerful. I don't care about having friends. That's sort of an ancient leadership strategy that still works today. But I think for those of us who want to maintain strong social bonds while also feeling good about ourselves and, you know, getting ahead, hubristic pride is definitely something to be avoided.
I guess you think that the thing that people mistake the most about pride is that it's actually useful.
Yes, I think that's very true. I think, you know, there are a lot of misconceptions out there about pride. And one of them is that it should be avoided at all costs, that it's always bad. And, you know, I think what we forget when we say that is that, well, no, actually, it's the reason that we want to do all the great things we do. You know, now I'm not saying everything we do is driven by pride, every great thing, but to a large extent, you know, the reason that we do good things, whether it's success or taking care of others or, you know, helping a charity, whatever it is, part of why we do it is because that's the kind of identity that we want, right? We want to be, I want to be a person who's good to others. I want to be a person who helps others. I want to be a person who achieves. And pride is the emotion that we feel as we're doing that, as we're kind of reaching that identity. And it's incredibly motivational because it's what makes us engage in the behaviors that get us there, that get us to those identities.
Yeah, and you can't scratch it out as literally part of being a human being.
Yeah, you can't, and I don't think we should want to. You know, I think it's a part of being a human being that's good for us. You know, as long as our social groups, you know, our societies determine what we feel pride of, are proud of. So, you know, if our societies say that it's the right thing to do is to help others, then we will feel proud for helping others, and that's great. So it's up to society to decide, you know, basically what the norms are. When we meet those social norms, we're going to feel proud of ourselves because it's, you know, the emotion that tells us that we're doing what we should be doing to essentially fit in with our social group and get ahead in that group. And that's a great thing. You know, it's evolution's worked in this way, and it's produced this fantastic system where we want to do the right thing and then we're rewarded for doing the right thing with these positive feelings.
And so if there's any caution, what would you throw out there for a caution about pride?
I mean, I think, absolutely. I think hubristic pride is the caution that, you know, you want to not get caught up just in the feelings, right? You don't want to just start thinking. I think it's okay to recognize that pride is what drives you. But then once you get to the point of thinking, wow, I'm just going to feel this pride, that's where people start to take shortcuts, right? And there are shortcuts. Okay. There are easy ways of getting those feelings without actually doing the hard work. The problem is, as soon as you do that, your feelings are no longer based on what you actually did, you know, the hard work that you put in, and they become more based on this artificial, grandiose sense of self that you're building up, and that's hubristic pride.
Well, this has been really fascinating. I've really enjoyed the book. I've skimmed it, and there's a lot of juicy stuff in there, so I highly recommend it. If you're listening to this, there's a lot of surprises in there, and I think it's well worth the read. So where can listeners find you if they want to dig in more?
Yeah, so my website at the University of British Columbia, where I'm a professor, tells all about my research, and you can access articles that we've written and the book as well there. And that's ubc-emotionlab.ca.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Jessica. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too. Please stop by and check it out.